The United States versus Wright. Mr. Cotton.
Good morning, Your Honors. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Anthony Cotton. I represent Marquitas Wright on this appeal. I was the trial counsel.
I shouldn't say it's a pleasure to be here. I don't know what's going to happen.
So far, so good.
So far.
I represented Mr. Wright at the trial level, and this case did proceed to a jury trial, as this court is obviously aware. Mr. Wright and a co-defendant were both charged with two crimes of selling a firearm to a convicted felon. What came out in this case was that a lady by the name of Carmen Estrada was working with the ATF, and they had set up a house in Milwaukee where they had outfitted this place with different recording devices. And Ms. Estrada had communicated with the co-defendant, Justin Holt. She set up deals with Justin Holt. Both of the gun transactions occurred on different dates. They were separated by a week or two apart. Each of these transactions was set up between Carmen Estrada and Justin Holt. When the video was activated and the recording devices were utilized in this case, we know that Ms. Estrada not only set up the deals with Mr. Holt, but then when the transactions took place, Mr. Wright was there for those transactions. And, in fact, he brought the gun. We can see on both videotapes he brought the gun. The issue for Mr. Wright, there was only one issue, one sort of central issue in this case for Mr. Wright, and that was whether or not he knew that Ms. Estrada was a felon. That was the defense. He didn't know she was a felon. The videotape, she only said it once. She said it one time on one of the videotapes. I think her testimony was that it was about 2 seconds that the comment was literally just made. There's no
Where
reaction.
Where was Wright?
I'm sorry?
Where was Wright?
In the room.
In the room?
In the room.
Who else was in the room?
Justin Holt.
Video clear?
More or less.
Sound clear?
More or less.
Jury heard it?
Yes. And in fact,
it was argued whether Mr. Wright heard it?
I'm sorry?
It was argued whether Mr. Wright heard that statement?
Right.
And then the jury made the decision based on that, the arguments, observed the people, the manner and demeanor, and made their decision that he must have heard it, right?
Perhaps. There was only two pieces of evidence with respect to whether he knew that she was a felon. Ms. Estrada had testified previously that she had a conversation with Mr. Holt and Mr. Wright where she told them about her felony status. And the jury got to hear that testimony, and that testimony went unrebutted because we were denied the opportunity to call Mr. Holt as a witness.
I thought there was some testimony, maybe I'm wrong, that there was a nodding of the head by him indicating, when this, I'm a convicted felon, that's why I can't go to a gun store and buy a gun. I have to get it from you two guys.
It was Ms. Estrada who narrated the tape that was played, and as Chief Judge said, obviously there's the jury took what they did from it. And there may have been a head nod by Mr. Wright. The point was that we had the video where it said briefly, the video was open to interpretation.
And you cross-examined her.
She was cross-examined, but we were deprived the opportunity to call Mr. Holt as a witness to question him about the veracity of Ms. Estrada's testimony that she had prior discussions with those two individuals about whether or not she was a felon. And we don't know that the jury just relied on videotape. I think the answer to that question, Judge, would be really clear had we had the opportunity to call Mr. Holt as a witness and had we been able to cross-examine him, but asked him on direct questions about his relationship with Ms. Estrada and whether or not the felony conviction was discussed previously.
Do you have an absolute right to call him as a witness?
We have a compulsory process right to call witnesses. It was our position at trial that we had the right to to ask questions of Mr. Holt because his testimony was critical to our defense. We wanted to establish that no prior conversation had occurred between Ms. Estrada and these two individuals about her felon status.
He invokes his Fifth Amendment privilege.
Right. And the court, when a person takes the Fifth, the court isn't allowed to just blindly accept the person's fear that they may or may not commit self-incriminating, that they may incriminate themselves. The court has to conduct a colloquy with that individual and ask them questions about perhaps not a detailed colloquy. Case law doesn't require some detailed questioning about what they fear, because the person does have the right to take the Fifth. But the court has to assure itself that the person can't possibly incriminate himself. And if there was no chance that Mr. Holt would incriminate himself, then he can't take the Fifth, and I get
to
question him.
I understand the argument is that they firmly believe that he was going to commit, Holt was going to commit perjury in his testimony, and a grant of immunity would preclude any prosecution of him for his act of committing perjury. And that's, we have to review that fairly deferentially. District court heard that argument and was persuaded by it.
So what should Judge Clavert
find an abuse of that discretion here?
And what should Judge Clavert have done? And Judge Evans just said exactly what the government says, and you're not disputing that, right? That's what happened.
It was nothing more than a blind assertion by the government.
Well, what's Judge Clavert supposed to do at that point?
Question the witness, question Mr. Holt about what his fears are. Question
do you have
him.
A case that says that if he doesn't do that, it's reversible error?
No, but there is Hoffman versus the United States, which is a Supreme Court case, that says a witness is not exonerated from answering simply because he declares that in so doing, he would incriminate himself. The Supreme Court said in Hoffman that the quote, say-so of the witness is not enough. And that's all we had in this case. We didn't even have the witness say that he felt he would incriminate himself. The record is clear that all the witness said was, I'll plead the Fifth. There wasn't even...
Holt and Wright actually half-brothers or step-brothers?
I don't think there was a... Mr. Wright was dating the aunt of Holt.
I saw something here that
they called each other stepbrothers.
Stepbrothers or something.
Did they live together at some time?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't think they did. They may have resided together. They weren't blood relatives, and I think they just sort of called each other stepbrothers as a term of endearment. But the case law does state that it's not enough for a witness just to say, I fear that I'll incriminate myself. The court has to assure itself that he can't possibly incriminate himself. And what we had here, judges, was nothing more than a bare assertion by the government that we think this person is going to commit perjury. Based on what? There was not one, and it's in defendant appellant's appendix 6, we have the statement that was prepared for Mr. Holt. There's not one thing in that statement that can be pointed to where we could say this person might be committing a crime if he testifies consistently with that. You have Ms. Estrada's testimony, and you have Mr. Holt's statements. It was nothing more than that bare assertion by the government. And to answer your question, Judge McCoskey, Judge Clavert should have questioned the witness, at least in some regard, as to what his fears were, and then made the appropriate findings.
Thank you, Mr. Cotton. Ms. Hoffman.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Gail Hoffman, and I was the attorney who represented the government below. And I'm going to address some of the points raised by the court and by counsel. Number one, Mr. Holt and Mr. Wright were childhood friends. He lived with his aunt, who later became the girlfriend. Mr. Holt lived with his aunt, who later became the girlfriend of Marquitas Wright since he was about 16 or 17 years old. And then ultimately, when Mr. Wright took up with Mr. Holt's aunt, then Mr. Holt moved out of the house. And that information is set out in the appellant's brief in the appendix. The statement is the statement of Mr. Holt is included and sets out the relationship between or refers to the relationship between the two.
The argument here today focuses not on the government's failure to immunize Holt, but Judge Clavert's failure, which counsel argues was error not to ask Holt questions in detail. What really happened, and what do you think that Judge Clavert did right?
The judge made a proper record. Actually, it was Mr. Cotton who examined the witness. The witness was called to the stand. He was put under oath. And actually, in the government appendant number 6, there are a series of questions that Mr. Cotton asks the witness. He says, Mr. Holt gets up on the stand and says, I'll plead the Fifth. And then there's a series of questions, and you talk to Attorney Donovan about that, correct? Yes. Have you been threatened to do so?
No. Have you been made any promises by the U.S. Attorney's Office not to testify? No. Is it a decision that you've reached on your own in consultation with Attorney Donovan? Yes. So those questions were put to the witness, and Judge Clavert need not go over ground already covered. It was based upon that record, the record that was before the court, that the court made the decision that this was a proper determination by this particular witness. He made it in consultation with his attorney. He indicated he was not threatened. He was not promised anything. That examination occurred from Mr. Cotton. Mr. Cotton was not limited in his ability to address questions to Mr. Holt regarding his decision to take the fifth. So based upon those questions, the district court or the chief judge properly made a determination that the witness was fully taking the fifth based upon his consultation with his attorney, and he was not threatened. He was neither threatened nor was he promised anything by the government to take that position.
Now, Ms. Hoffman, your contention was that Holt might perjure himself, right?
Correct.
Did Judge Clavert seek any reasoning from you on why you felt that? Or did he just accept your...
Not specifically, but I indicated that I believed that there was information that he provided during his statement that was in contradiction with what the facts were. I mean, in fact, there are statements in the record. For instance, when the CI testified, she indicated that the car that Mr. Wright drove up in was her vehicle, that's the vehicle she took to one of the deals. However, in his statement, he said that Wright drove his vehicle to the deal. So right then and there, based on what's in the record, that right there is a contradiction. I mean, clearly he was not willing to tell the government that Wright drove to the deal in the informant's car. It was Holt said it was his car. But there were a series of statements that contradicted what the informant said and what Mr. Holt said. But no, he generally accepted the assertion that we believe that he might commit perjury.
Well, were you as expansive as you have been this morning with us, with Judge Clavert?
No. And I believe the record bears that out. The judge did, when Mr. Holt took the stand, the judge had the benefit of hearing Ms. Estrada's testimony. And he also knew what was at issue with Mr. Holt, that Mr. Holt would have said that Ms. Estrada never said that she had previously told them that she was a felon. And so her testimony had been laid out in the record, and believe me, she came with a lot of baggage, and the judge could see that. So with my statement that I believe that she would perjure herself, it was pretty clear from the record at that point what the issue was. I would like to address, before my time runs out, I would like to address another point raised by the court, and that was...
The video?
The video, yes. I believe, based on the question the jury sent back, that they made their determination based upon the video and upon the audio, because they were deliberating, and towards the end of their deliberations, they sent out a question saying, we would like to see the video with the audio without the transcript. As the court may know from previous cases, the government uses a program that runs a transcript simultaneously with the video or the audio, but that transcript is not evidence, but it's part of the government software. They requested that they listen and see the tape without the transcript, which they knew had been provided by the government. So they came into the courtroom. The judge had the clerk's office prepare such an exhibit or remove the transcript. And they sat and they watched and listened to the video and the audio without the government's transcript. And it was shortly after that question and after that viewing that they came back with a determination. The informant had many, many issues. You know, she had testified she worked as a prostitute. She had testified that she had used drugs extensively. She didn't have custody of her kids. But I think most damaging to her, I think the jury accepted that was her life, but most damaging to her was that she testified that during the course of her cooperation, she continued to buy crack cocaine from Justin Holt for personal use without telling the detective that was working with her. So based upon that last question by the jury, it appears that after watching that piece of evidence, that objective piece of evidence, the video and the audio, without the accompanying transcript provided by the government, that the jury reached their own conclusion that the informant had made that statement, I'm a felon, I can't buy no new gun. She turns, they're all within arms, you know, if you see the video, you'll see this. They're all within arm's length of each other. They're standing around a table. I'm a convicted felon, I can't buy a new one, can you? And then Justin Holt answers in response, yeah, I can buy a new one. And Marquitas Wright is right next to Holt, right next to Carmen Estrada. And it's my position, and that based on that last question by the jury, that the jury made that determination that the defendant heard the informant say, I'm a convicted felon, and went ahead with that transaction and a subsequent transaction, therefore meeting the element of that offense. If the court has no further questions for me, I rest on our submissions.
Ms. Hoffman, the only thing missing from your argument is the parallel comment that it would be a pleasure to appear before this panel, but Mr. Cotton.
So well, that
I'm going to assume that's your position.
Your Honor, it was a pleasure to appear before the panel. Looking forward to it the next time.
And you may come to the Central District of Illinois anytime you wish, both of you.
Thank you.
Mr. Cotton had some time. He had 2 minutes remaining.
Mr. Cotton, let me ask you, I have to use up your 2 minutes, but your request is to vacate the conviction and have a new trial. It seems to me that if you're right, what you should get here is a remand to Judge Clavert to make a more complete record on the grant of immunity, or the failure to grant immunity, that we wouldn't send this back for a new trial.
But we should send it back for a new trial so that we can do this process the right way. The court has to do the colloquy.
What if it goes back and the court does the colloquy and says, you know, I was right the first time. Maybe I didn't make as good a record, but I'm not going to make this witness. I'm not going to confer immunity on this witness. I'm not going to ask the government to order him to make a motion for him.
Well, we still do, of course, have the immunity issue outstanding that Your Honor referenced, and I think this case is very similar to the Herrera-Medina case cited in our brief, where the government doesn't have any intention of prosecuting this other individual. This is the only witness that the defense had subpoenaed to testify at trial. The government can simply say, we believe, in our estimation, this is an untruthful person. We think they're exposing themselves, even though this was our witness, for a year or more, and this was on our witness list, and until a week before trial, we intended to call this person. Now he's given testimony that's helpful to the defendant, so we think it's untruthful. And based on those assertions, deprive the defendant of the right to call witness at trial. Those are sharp tactics, and this court has held in Herrera-Medina that tactics like that could be grounds for dismissal of the indictment against an individual. That's what we have in this case. I think the conviction should be vacated. This should be remanded. The immunity issue has to be addressed, and the court does have to make a proper finding as to whether or not the individual can incriminate himself. Are there any other questions?
Yeah.
Okay. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cotton. Thank you, Ms. Hoffman. Mr. Cotton, you have an additional thanks for accepting this appointment and ably representing the appellant. All right. Case is taken under advisement. Court will proceed.